Good afternoon. Welcome back. Over to you again, Richard. Richard Bradstock is with us, who's senior consultant with IP Global, sharing with us the details of one of their latest reports, which is a property barometer where they've basically looked at the various different countries and cities, I'd say, around the world that have hosted the Olympics and seen how it has affected the property market. It's a legacy, isn't it, I suppose, holding the Olympics. And Mike, we were chatting earlier, weren't we? You were saying that it's sort of, it's not really been very good for a lot of countries because they've got a lot of, you know, it's a massive amount of money that's spent initially and they've obviously got to think about, again, going back to this whole idea of the Olympic legacy, how are these stadiums, how are these hotels, how are these all these facilities going to be actually used post-Olympics?
Absolutely, yeah.
So talk us through, first of all, why choose the Olympics as a sort of barometer?
Well, I suppose a little bit of fun as much as anything else. It is relevant as well. Obviously, London, we started with, is in the gold medal position. What you're saying there about the Olympics and perhaps not being actually that great for cities, potentially, when you look back at it. I mean, we actually haven't done... We're not investing in the areas around Stratford or these sorts of areas in where the Olympic regeneration is going on. The cities tend to use the Olympics as a way of regenerating less well-off areas, I think it's fair to say. And when you're looking at it from a property investment point of view, those are probably the areas you don't want to be involved with anyway, simply because the fundamentals just aren't as good as they might be in very central London, for example.
But you wouldn't see these as potentially new areas. I mean, obviously, London's constantly expanding, isn't it? And there's these great new sort of which areas that I can't think of any now. You'd probably know better than me, Mike, coming from that area. Such places as, I mean, Notting Hill was never a fancy area.
Paddington, round there, Paddington, Notting Hill, it was awful. But now it's fantastic.
You see it going down the Northern Line, Clapham and Balham.
Balham especially.
These sorts of areas.
Gateway
too.
To the south, as they call it.
So why wouldn't you look at these areas then as a potential that they might go the same way?
I think in time, absolutely, that would happen. I think it comes down to, you know, there are just better areas. That's all. It's all relative.
It's not really, you're not really thinking long term then?
Well, we are. I mean, everything we do is looking at a sort of a minimum really of a 5-year hold. However, an area like Stratford, despite all that regeneration, sort of forced regeneration that's happened, we don't think it's we think you can get better returns, I suppose, in slightly more core areas of
so
London.
What core areas are you looking at the moment?
So we've been doing a lot in Islington. So, you know, already, you know, typically with everywhere, we tend to look at areas adjacent to the fashionable areas, if you like, because as you say about Notting Hill and so on, you know, that gentrification process, it does spread out along, you know, the wealth, the people who can't afford to live in Notting Hill, they're now moving, you know, to Westbourne Park or it sort of all spreads out. Other areas, for example, we're doing a lot in SE1 now, where the Shard, which has obviously been in the news a lot recently, there's so much regeneration happening there, development, both private and, you know, government.
What other pros have you got? Because I've got a lot of cons for London, so I won't.
No kidding, Mike.
give me other pros, because I still haven't heard anything that really turns me on yet.
I think it really comes down to supply and demand at the end of the day.
Oh, no, I'd totally agree with that. So, what do you think about the London financial crisis, and what do you think about the most financial jobs being lost over 11 and 12 are in London, and the ecosystem that relies on London financial centres to actually exist? So where are all these jobs going? Where are all these people going? And all these bonuses they've just lost, and they will not get them, and if they do get them, they'll be 5-year deferred and in shares. They won't have any cash. I'm struggling to understand why London would have any demand.
From outside, probably.
From outside,
There's a significant demand. I mean, it's the most internationally bought city in the world.
It was just before 07, then it had a crash, and it is now.
It is now, yeah.
That tells me two things. One, it's just before a crash, because that's when you always get the last rush of demand, is just before it crashes, because that's what takes it up to the city level that then people look at and say, that's a city level. I'm also worried about sterling, because I'm also worried about, you're talking international investors.
Yeah.
So I'm worried about how you look at the currency effects, and whether you look at you know, I have no problem with San Francisco or New York from a currency point of view, but I see sterling as massively vulnerable, massively vulnerable.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's always risks with investing, you know.
Oh, no, sure. Of course. No problem with that.
Of course.
Yeah.
I do think, however, that I mean, for example, building levels are akin to 1978 at the moment. That's the level of building we have. And so property and London property.
But we had a crash in 81, didn't we?
Yeah, but it's still a long time ago. I mean, it is 30, whatever it is.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is you had a shortage in 78, and as you say, not much building, but then you had a crash in 81.
But then we've got a massive shortage now. I mean, even you know, I mean, Chris obviously alluded to the fact just now that it is more difficult, for example, to get mortgages in London. However, that is improving, and so there are more buyers coming back into the market locally.
Is that improving at the moment, Chris?
Yeah, at the moment, definitely improving. We deal with NatWest, with RBS, and the banks that have been in the news a lot, HSBC, and some of the local ones like the Halifax, you remember. So no, we at the moment, touch wood and whistle, we have a very, very good record of the people that are buying in London from here. The banks are lending. I mean, going back to your argument, you know, I was around in 1981, but that was the time of the ERM. And
no, that was 91.
81.
That was 92. Was the ERM?
The
92. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I thought that was it.
No. I traded through VRM, so that's my basis for understanding what's happening in the EU at the moment, because it's no difference. It's just a load of countries pretending they're all together and some cheating and some not.
But that's what I was saying. Right. I mean, can we follow the same sort of cycle? I mean, things, you know, now everyone says that this is completely unprecedented.
This is a completely different
you know, being that's been created. So, I mean, you're talking about cycles, and once, you know, the height, then there's a crash soon after. But can we sort of follow that same
process? Well, it's always a crash after a height, because there has to be. That's just it. But, I mean, if you talk about cycles, and this is where I really have a debate with most property people. It's a debate. It's not an argument. It's not a one-way thing. You have to look at what we're looking at the moment. We're looking at interest rates across the globe being the lowest they've been for 400 years. That is not a cycle. It cannot be a cycle, otherwise you would have it following a pattern. Mm. If you've got a one-off in 400 years, you've got a one-off. That's called secular. And what we've done is we've followed a 40-year credit bubble. And when you follow a 40-year credit bubble, the chances are is you've got an awful lot of things that are not going to be normal, because the credit bubble wasn't normal. It took it to a ridiculous level, and then it crashed. Now, all we've seen is governments trying to hold it and trying to stop it crashing too fast by printing money, but, of course, they're not winning. They keep losing, and they keep coming up with these funny announcements about how they're going to solve it, and they don't, because you can't solve it. You can't solve the amount of debt in the Western world.
So just going back to this report, though, and is it, I mean, because London obviously gets gold, and then you've got various other different countries that have hosted the Olympics, such as Beijing and Tokyo. You mentioned earlier, I think, Atlanta, which actually was disqualified, and Athens, well.
Athens, yeah.
Yeah, well, but I mean, is it not slightly unfair, though, because London is actually hosting it this year, so, and all the others obviously are post-Olympic holders, so... I mean, the buzz is all about London. Everyone's looking at, you know, what's happening there, et cetera, et cetera. So is this really, I don't really get how these figures are really sort of, I can't think of another word. I was going to say skewed, but not skewed, but I mean, kind of relevant, really.
Well, I mean, I think we've been, you know, we've, as Chris mentioned earlier, we've been investing in London for the last 2.5 years, obviously New York and Malaysia too. And, you know, a part of what IP Global does is simply as provide information. And so this, and sort of to educate people about markets around the world.
But it's also,
this is just one way of doing that.
But it also seems that as soon as the Olympics have been held in a city, as we mentioned earlier, they tend to drop. So, you know, if you're saying this is a good time to invest in London, is it really? Because post-Olympics, what's going to happen?
Yeah, I'm not familiar, I mean, exactly with the figures and the reasons whys and wherefores, for example. I don't know whether that happened in Atlanta, for example. I don't know that. But, I mean, this is more about, I mean, regardless of the Olympics, for us, it is more about the simple supply and demand characteristic. That's really what it comes back to. And the fact that there is a huge shortage of housing in London.
And there's a huge shortage of Rolls Royces, but that doesn't mean everyone can have one.
Well, that is true.
You know what I mean? I laugh at this argument that people use. There's
there
a shortage
a huge
of houses.
Story. It's because, well, possibly in London, but the main reason, there are ghost towns in the north of England. There are ghost towns in the, probably further down
we
south.
We wouldn't suggest you invest in Bradford.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's not that there's a shortage of housing. It's just that everyone's left there because they're trying to find jobs elsewhere. There's a massive sort of
a good point, Siobhan, because
migration
see,
of people to the urban, bigger urban centres, which is just disproportionate.
If you're going to see these jobs lost in London, can you imagine what's going to happen?
Well, they'll all go back out. Look at how Manchester. I mean, I'm from absolutely. Just near Manchester. Yeah.
Do you not think, perhaps, though, that with if the worst happens, obviously, fingers crossed it doesn't. But if it does, the jobs there will be. Are most likely to be in London than anywhere else, simply because it is the major, already established.
Not necessarily, if the rents are really, really high. I mean, you know, let me just look at Manchester as a case study. I mean, how many companies moved from London up to Manchester? BBC, I suppose, is one massive example,
wasn't it? Yes.
And various others as well, because they couldn't afford it, and people couldn't afford it, and so they moved up. Now Manchester is not exactly cheap now anyway. There are various areas. It's still cheaper, I'd say, than living in London, definitely. Yeah. Overall, standard of living wise.
To that point, Siobhan, I mean, one of our listeners just texted in saying London is still hugely overpriced.
True.
There are so many other cities and countries with better investment opportunities, not to mention nicer places to live. Luke.
Well, I mean, as I said, it's all about supply and demand, and it's all about work and businesses. But I mean, if the city is going to take a huge hit, like you're sort of saying it, you possibly
well, it's all about
could,
pricing as well, and it's all about availability of credit. But if you make it too dear, the same happened to Dubai, didn't it? I mean, when it became too dear, people moved out to Ajman, they moved out to Sharjah, and then that allowed it to fall back again to a sensible level where people came back in again. I mean, that's the sort of ebb and flow, and that's not secular, that is cyclical, but you may have a secular thing overriding that makes the whole thing sort of, you know, redundant in terms of what's going on.
We must take a break. Sorry, we're over time for the news, but do stay with us. We'll continue the conversation after that.